Anna, and this is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. And our guest this hour is the one and only Reverend Ted Pike. His website is truthtellers.org. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Deanna.
Well, it's wonderful to talk with you again. We haven't spoken for quite some time, except by telephone just in the recent past few days. But you've had some wonderful articles on your website. One, Debunking Joe Farah's Jewish Fables. And I do get his, I believe it's daily, his daily newsletter.
Romance Daily.
Right. And I do this because I like to keep with what the other people are talking about. I like to see what I don't want to say my enemies, but I like to know both sides of all these issues. And so I really appreciate your debunking of some of his fables, because he comes across with some very interesting ones.
Well, yes. For many years, WorldNet Daily has been valuable, particularly to my crusade against hate laws around 2005. Farah did alert the country to the encroaching problem of state and federal hate laws, as well as abuse of them, persecutions of Christians and dissenters in Canada. But unfortunately, his message of Christian conservatism has always been mixed with the rawest Mossad propaganda straight from Jerusalem. And one of the fallacies of the fables which he continuously puts out, and he still does, is the lie largely begun, I believe, by Golda Meir, that prior to the arrival of the Zionists, Palestine was this desolation of sand dunes. There was hardly anybody there except a fairly sizable population of Jews, very few Arabs. But when the Israelis, the Zionists, came in at the turn of the 20th century and began to bring industry and agricultural productivity and so on, Farah and Pam Geller and other of these stooges for the Zionists, or representatives, I should say, of them, they say that the Arabs rushed in from Jordan and from Lebanon and Egypt and so on to cash in on Zionist-induced prosperity. And therefore, they say there was never really a Palestinian population in Palestine ever. They came in as basically kind of riff-raff migrant people, only with the Jewish, as the Jews were making Israel blossom as the rose in fulfillment of prophecy and so on. And therefore, they say when the Arab legions started to invade in 1948, trying to liberate the Palestinians, they say that this Arab riffraff, 800,000 or so, quickly fled because they didn't have any identity, any sense of ownership of the land. They were basically opportunists. They fled so that the Arab legions could come in and wipe out the Jews, and then the immigrants would come back in and basically possess the whole land of Palestine, including Jerusalem. This is a lie, of course, which comes right out of Israeli Zionist propaganda, and Farah has promoted it repeatedly as the great truth, the great explanation of the whole Palestinian problem, is that there is no Palestinian right of return. There never was a Palestinian presence there, but it's all a false issue that they should come back and obtain their previous territory again.
Exactly. All righty, we are going to take a break. We will be right back in 3 minutes with our guest. And we are back. This is Deanna, and our guest this hour is Reverend Ted Pike. His website is truthtellers.org, and you can sign up for his newsletter, and I recommend that you do that. And you were talking about your article, Debunking Joe Farah's Jewish Fables, and you mentioned the comment, or this theory, this a statement that this country was a land without a people, and then we have a people without a land, and why not get these guys together? And this started back in 1853 with Lord Shaftesbury. And it has just grown. And as you say, Golda Meir, she just clomped onto that. And and we see what has happened.
Well, you know, Mark Twain went over there, I believe, in the 1880s. And he confined his visit largely to the Jerusalem area, Galilee, the hilly northern region. And he didn't see many Arabs around. It seemed to be quite desolate, and he wrote back to the big newspapers that it seemed to be barren, and this was picked up by the evangelicals and evangelical propaganda, Zionist propaganda, as proving that a credible eyewitness there found Palestine to be, again, a desolation. But the truth is that Twain didn't go down into southern Israel, and very credible witness was there. Let's see, maybe you can help me here a little bit. His name was, anyway, in 1860 or so, here it is, Lord Oliphant visited Palestine in 1870, wrote that Palestine's valley of Esdraelon was a, quote, huge green lake of waving wheat with its village-crowned mounds rising from it like islands, and it presents one of the most striking pictures of luxurious fertility which is possible to conceive. And, in fact, numerous pre-20th century accounts recounted in the Encyclopedia of the Palestine Problem, which I quote extensively from in this article, describe it as a veritable concupia of every kind of agricultural produce with excess exported by the Palestinians even to the nations of Europe. And the Palestinians, in fact, were the great agriculturalists of the Mideast. And there was a very sizable Palestinian presence there, which was recorded in censuses. And in fact, in 1882, the Jewish population of Palestine was only about 24,000. In 1914, the entire population of Palestine was estimated at 634,000 Muslim and Christian Arabs and only 55,000 Jews. That's 1914, the time of the First World War. But in 1920, there was a League of Nations census after the British Mandate, and this official census showed the Arab population, both Muslim and Christian Arabs, at nearly 600,000, still greatly exceeding the Jews, who only numbered about 66,000. Now, Farah and the Zionists, they claim that during all this period, even into the 19th century, the Jews were a majority population in Palestine. But the hard facts of both the League of Nations, the later UN censuses, and so on, found that even in Jerusalem, the quintessential Jewish city, the Arabs outnumbered the Jews 2-1. And in fact, in some 400 plus towns in Palestine, the population of Arabs was 98%. In the surrounding towns and cities. And so the audacity of Zionist propaganda and their mouthpieces here in the West to repeat the most incredible so-called facts without any lies, without any documentation, is truly amazing, truly audacious. That's why I felt led to really take on Farah, get the record straight. I should add that Jeff Rentz received an email from Farah when this article came out claiming that I was lying, and he said, how would you like it if I put up on WorldNet Daily lies against Jeff Rentz, like you're doing, letting Ted Pike debunk me in this article. But So Jeff actually invited him three different times to come onto his program, explain where I had lied, provide some kind of documentation to his allegation that I was an anti-Semite and a liar. He never could do that. In fact, I did a small, quite powerful little video, which people can watch at truthtellers.org, debunking Farah and demanding that he apologize to me, but he could never provide any documentation and certainly would not provide an apology.
Well, do you know why that is, Reverend? It's because you have all the documentation. You have the truth on your side. And when you have the truth on your side, people tend to shy away from it if that's not the story they're telling.
Yes.
And so it's just best to ignore the truth and go on spinning your tails.
Well, amazingly, after going through this article, and people can read this article at truthtellers.org. Again, it's right at the top. I sent it out as a reprint. It's such valuable information concerning that this misinformation coming from Israel never ends, and the evangelical proxies and like Farah and even Pam Geller, who is not an evangelical, but just last week she was parroting all of this on her website, Atlas Shrugs. So the propaganda keeps going, and I like to put up this article about once a year, so just to keep people oriented as to what the reality was.
Well, I think that's a wonderful idea because they certainly continue to tell the lies, and your essay is a very wonderful essay to refute the lies that they are telling, and so you're providing a very necessary function here in refuting this.
That's right. One of the sources for this article is the Encyclopedia of the Palestine Problem, and this is not an amateur work. It's a major a summary of everything that happened in Palestine, particularly over the last century and a quarter or so. It's by Dr. Isa Nekla, who was an evangelical Christian, really an Arab. He was a Palestinian barrister, lawyer, and a diplomat, a very, very eminent spokesman for the Palestinian cause and the truth. And the history of the Palestine problem can be, most college and university libraries have it, and I encourage anyone, especially the many students who are anti-Zionist on campus, to go down to your large campus library. If you're at a large university, they will almost certainly have that there. It is the Encyclopedia of the Palestine Problem is available online. Just Google that term, and I believe you can read 1,500 pages at least of powerful, exhaustive documentation on what really, really happened in Palestine. Of course, Farah and others are very bold, just like Geller was last week on her website, claiming that when the Arab legions in 1948 began to invade Israel from Jordan, what they say is that the Israelis pled with the Palestinians to stay in Israel, but no, the Palestinians, they wanted to desert Israel, and they wanted to leave Israel to the mercies of the homicidal, bloodthirsty Arabs who were going to slaughter all the Jews so that the Arabs, Palestinians, could come back in and have the whole land. The truth of the matter is that the history of the Palestinian problem, the Encyclopedia of the Palestine Problem, exhaustively documents the Deir Yassin massacre in April of 1948, when the forces of Irgun and the Stern Gang came into the sleeping town of Deir Yassin and slaughtered at least 100 Palestinians before dawn, choking the wells with their bodies and precipitating. They then went throughout the streets of Judea with trucks, with loudspeakers, blaring out in Arabic that if the Palestinians did not flee immediately, their orchards and their farms, their businesses and homes, their fate would be the same as the Arabs of Deir Yassin. And so actually, these the Arab generals, they were so terrified. They were terrified by the utter bloodthirstiness of the Jewish Ergun and Stern group terrorists that they told the people to flee and get out of there because they believed that the Zionists would continue that kind of massacre and actually kill all these Palestinians right there in Israel. They told them, get out, get over to Jordan, flee to wherever you can, and we will retake Palestine for you, but you need to be safe. And so it wasn't an act of cowardice or convenience or treachery of any kind for those 800,000 Palestinians to flee for their lives, literally with nothing on their backs but their clothes. They fled. They many, many were shot, raped, pillaged, even strafed by ME-109s as they fled into Lebanon, Jordan, Egypt, and so on.
Exactly. All righty. We will be back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest this hour is Reverend Ted Pike. His website is truthtellers.org, and we will also put the URL for that website where people can find the Encyclopedia of the Palestinian Problem. I think that's thank you so much for bringing that up. And we do know, at least I do know, and I've had people talk about this on the program before, that the Israelis came in and the Jutsis came in and they destroyed 500 communities and took over the housing, took over the orchards, took over the olive groves, and terrible, terrible thing. And of course, it's still going on. I don't know how Joe Farah can talk about tell these fables when in fact it's still going on.
Yes, in this article I have a really good quote from the Encyclopedia of the Palestine Problem by Moshe Dayan, a general Moshe Dayan.
Mm-hmm.
He says we came to this country, which was already populated by Arabs, and we are establishing a Hebrew, that is a Jewish state here. Jewish villages were built in the place of Arab villages. You do not even know the names of these Arab villages, and I do not blame you, because these geography books no longer exist. Not only do the books not exist, the Arab villages are not there either. And then he goes on to provide a list of a number of Arab villages which now have Jewish names. The original villages were bulldozed and so on. It's just really astonishing the way the audacity of the Zionists and their stooges here in the West to remake boldly, audaciously remake the greatest realities of history and sell it, particularly to gullible evangelicals here. And that's why I have to, even though Farah claims to be a Christian and I am also an evangelical, I have to take him on. And really let the world know that WorldNet Daily is a very, very mixed bag of Zionist lies, raw Zionist Mossad propaganda piped in from Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, with vital Christian conservative truth. And while, as you just said at the beginning of this program, you do consult WorldNet Daily for some conservative truth and realities and social issues and political issues. Nevertheless, he is a very deceptive and unworthy, undependable source of all of reality.
Right. I mean, I look at it because I want to see what kind of lies they're spinning, so that I know how to counter that kind of thing. It's one of those sites that, well, I often look at both. Always look at both sides of any issue, and you mentioned their spinning of history, and of course we know that the Allies have spun the history of World War II. They lie about all the wars, so that the winners write the wars, the stories, and that is certainly what he is doing, and it's egregious, it's despicable, and have absolutely no respect for what he's doing. Yeah. And whatever he claims to be, people should tell the truth.
Yes, or at least they should be, learn from their gullibility, their errors of the past. They should amend, not even requiring him to make a public correction, but or he continues to say exactly the same thing now that he did 3 or 4 years ago when this article was first put out. The same lies, nothing changes. He just he's impervious to correction or documentation, even from people like Moshe Dayan, impeccable witnesses. Certainly Menachem Begin, who authorized the Deir Yassin massacre, he has very publicly documented how he is father of terrorism in the world, how not only at Deir Yassin, but in many subsequent massacres and sieges and pillages of the Palestinians, the Jewish state was created. Another thing that's astonishing is how that in the Encyclopedia of the Palestine Problem, it tells about, it says in 1948 the Zionists seized 90% of Arab-owned citrus groves, packaging and storage facilities, as well as that year's crop, looting the prosperous Arab citrus growers, making them destitute refugees. And the same was true of all aspects of Palestinian industry. And yet, Israel was able to spin that and could convince the evangelicals that they were responsible for the sudden profusion and sudden existence of all of these extensive agricultural industries in Palestine, including citrus and wheat and grain and tobacco and leather, dairy, fishing. All of this, they say, was a result of Jewish industry and even agricultural genius. Well, the truth of the matter is that the Jews that came down from Poland were not agriculturalists in Poland. People like Shamir and Begin and the rest of them were Ashkenazi Jews who were people of the ghetto. And what they did was they basically took Palestinian agricultural prosperity and made it their own.
Exactly. All righty, we are going to take a break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest this hour is Reverend Ted Pike. His website is truthtellers.org. And I had a couple questions and a comment, actually a question from the chat room. From Lisa, and she says, please ask Reverend Pike about all the Old Testament verses that talk about the nation serving Israel, and also about God supposedly telling them to attack, conquer, and kill other tribes. So she's having a big problem with this. And when I had Dr. Lorraine Day on my program, she's the author of Who Rewrote the Bible, she says that the committee that was chartered with this task actually consisted of Jews. Would you agree with that?
From my theological perspective, what you have to do when you're considering the conquest of Palestine around 1500 BC, as a Christian, I believe that what God was doing to the Jewish people, to the Hebrews at that time, was he was establishing a fortress, he was establishing a base of operations within an extremely hostile, pagan, perverse world. And even today, next to the ancient Mayans and South American cultures with their bloodletting, the Palestinians, the Canaanites, are still notorious for infanticide, sexual perversion, idolatry, including infant sacrifices, all of that kind of thing. And when what God had to do in making sure that the truth and light of the Old Testament Mosaic Covenant and the very, very, very advanced moral laws of the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law be preserved within a sea of extreme opposition, military opposition, he had to insist on the prerogative of the Hebrews to exercise a military response to that. Now, when the Hebrews went into Palestine, into Canaan land, they did let the Canaanites know that if they would move out, if they would not resist, they would not be killed. But of course, most of them did not. The Amorites, the Girgashites, the Canaanites, all of them rose up in war against the Hebrews, and they had to be responded to in a military way. They had to be driven out of the land. And speaking in practical terms, if the morality of peaceful coexistence and tolerance, which we exert today, which we extend to homosexuals, we extend to almost everybody in society, were extended at that time to the Canaanites, within less than a generation, the whole Hebrew experiment of establishing morality leading to Jesus Christ would have been extinguished. Now, from our armchairs today, we say, oh, tut, 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 oh, that was vicious, or that was recriminatory, or that was savage, or whatever, in extirpating these nations that came against the Hebrews. But it was necessary, and it was a brutal time. It was a time in which the law of eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth was necessary in dealing with these nations. And in the fullness of time, when Jesus came, of course, Jesus said, if you take up this sword, you're going to die by the sword. But at that time, it was necessary to deal in a military, straightforward way, which in some ways violates our ethical standards today.
Exactly. But you're talking about the Hebrews, and of course we know that the Jews of today have no relationship, ethnic relationship to Palestine whatsoever, that they weren't... They're not descendants of Israel.
But that's
another topic altogether.
Are you talking about the Khazars?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I would like to let people know that extensive research is going on now under the leadership of a Jewish geneticist from Johns Hopkins University, Dr. Elhike. And I write an extensive article. I have it at truthtellers.org. It's about 3 months old now, but it's been extremely popular. And he is adjusting Arthur Koestler's theory of the 13th tribe. He's adjusting that to new research, which has been very loudly touted, proving that genetically... most Eastern European Jews do contain a fairly high percentage of Jewish Semitic genes in them, even though they are descended also from the Khazars of the East. And so I'm having to revise my position somewhat just from the theories of Koestler, which I have been very bold in promoting, to say that what evidently happened was, in the 8th century A.D., there was a massive infusion of Jews from the West, from Byzantium, from the Mediterranean, into Khazaria, not only then as a result of Christian persecution in the West, but also they came up from Babylonia in Mesopotamia, from the academies. This was no small opportunity for the rabbinic leaders in Mesopotamia to create a satellite nation in Khazaria. And Dr. Elhike is finding extremely powerful genetic evidence that the origin of Eastern European or Ashkenazi Jewry really does begin in Khazaria, in a compromise, in an infusion of Jewish genes in with the Khazarian genes. And so what we basically have is a hybridization of the Jews today in the Ashkenazi branch of Judaism.
But of course, Arthur Koestler is not the only person that has said that, and I don't know that I would trust a Jewish geneticist, however you say it, a Jewish person who is working in a genetical field. Well, but anyway, let's go on. Let's go back to our original topic. Let me just make another comment. Somebody, Tom, said, what about T.E. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia, who noted in his books back in 1922 about the entire region, and he mentions the cultivation of fields, grasslands, etc. And so there is plenty of evidence to support the fact that the Palestinians were very well entrenched in the land, that they had vineyards and all kinds of things. And would you say, though, that that probably the Palestinians are certainly from the tribe of Abraham?
Well, the Palestinians, again, are a hybrid race. The Arabs are the descendants of Ishmael, who was the offspring between Abraham, who was a pure Semite,
and Hagar.
And Hagar, who was an Egyptian. So the Palestinians, or the Arab Palestinians, basically are half Semitic, half Hamitic descendants of the Egyptians. They are not Semites. What we have is we have Israelites now, so-called Israelites or Israelis, who are half Khazar, half Semites, and then their adversaries are also a hybridized race.
Interesting. All righty. Okay, let's take some callers. Let's take Wes from Idaho. Wes, welcome to the program.
Hello, Diana. Thank you for taking my call. A question for Ted. On the subject of land, 2 Samuel 7:10, what is his position where it says God was going to move his people, Israel, to a new and safer, better place where they would no longer be bothered by the wicked? Hello?
I wasn't expecting this to be a theological discussion today, so I don't have my Bible with me.
Wes,
I think probably what you're trying to introduce there is an identity Christian point of view.
It doesn't have to be. I don't think if you want to take the other position.
Well, let's stick to the. I'm sorry, I brought up the Khazar situation to begin with, because we are talking about Joseph Farah's Jewish fables, and
that's
so
right.
I would like to stick to that topic.
Okay. Carry on then. 2 Samuel 7:10. Some other day, perhaps.
That would be good. Okay. Thanks, Wes.
Thank you, Wes.
All right, Werner from Canada.
Good afternoon, Dan,
yes.
And good afternoon, Reverend Pike.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah, look, I'm kind of an observer. I'm still learning as I go along, and I just want to ask a few questions.
Sure.
The proof of the pudding is in the eating. When we look at the map of Palestine, how much of the land that 100 years ago was nearly solely in possession of the Palestinian people is now in the possession of the State of Israel?
Yes, of course.
You know, you got the proof right there.
Yes.
You know, what has been the agenda all along, you know,
yes,
to force the Palestinian people out by hook and by crook?
Yes, absolutely.
And then we got the question about dialectic. When I heard over the years always about, they talk about the settlers, you know, I try to look at things objective. If you bulldoze somebody else's house down, you know, and you build an apartment building, or you move into somebody else's house and chase the owners out of the house, you're not a settler, you're a squatter.
Of course, absolutely. Well,
you know, this is basically what the mainstream media, you know, the kind of dialectic that has been pushed, you know, tilted always one way. Or most of the time, one way.
Yes.
And we know which way it has been tilted. Now,
yes,
in the Bible there is written, Satan was a liar and a murderer right from the beginning. And what is the track record of the Israeli government, you know, since its establishment? And even before, when they were aiming for establishing their so-called Jewish homeland. With how many lies and deceptions have been working. And yes. ever since, the Israeli Secret Service, you know, the Mossad, by deceit, yes. we shall make war.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Does that sound in the spirit of the Almighty? I don't think so.
Of course not. Yeah.
You know?
Well, the whole Israeli religious establishment is basically based on Orthodox Judaism or the Babylonian Talmud, as well as the Zohar or the Kabbalah. And this is these two great works are the great legal and ethical authority for all observant Jews today. And they go back to the ancient Pharisees, whom Jesus described as deceivers and liars and a lot more. In fact, he described them and their so-called church as the synagogue of Satan, literally Satan's church in this world. And the Orthodox position is the official position of the State of Israel. The State of Israel does not really honor the liberal, the reform position. It perhaps tolerates the conservative, but the Orthodox Pharisaic synagogue of Satan position is that of Israel. And so it is not surprising that their dealings with the Palestinians, their military dealings, their economic dealings with the Palestinians over the past centuries have been treacherous, have been persecutive, and certainly by way of deception is basically what Israel is all about, and the deception is going on right now.
And the way the State of Israel and its predecessors and its the ones that have been cheerleading the State of Israel and the establishment of the State of Israel in North America, in Europe, especially in the United Kingdom, basically what they have done, they have shown, you know, what they are all about. And when we look at the track record, that should be unacceptable in a so-called civilized society. But I think those that tout the most about how civilized they are, they basically have only a thin veneer of civilization, and underneath there is a barbarism.
Yeah. In fact, I have been protesting Pam Geller's bus ads. Pam Geller is a Jewish spokesman from New York City, who's ingratiated herself again with Joseph Farah and WorldNet Daily, and is portraying herself as a Jewish conservative, anti-Islamicist, and she has a bus ads that are being shown even here in Portland. She has the bus ads up, and it says basically what is the exact phrase? I have it.
Let's see.
Yeah, I've got it. In any war between the civilized man and the savage, support the civilized man. Support Israel. Defeat jihad, meaning the Muslims and the Arabs. And the truth of the matter is that no government in this century has been more barbaric in its treatment of the indigenous inhabitants as Israel has against the Arabs. Israel is not a democracy. It is not. It does not have tolerance for Christians. It is not a truly civilized nation. And so what we have here is basically a rogue nation which has deceived, by way of deception, it has snookered the evangelicals for a century, has created a strong delusion that the evangelicals are believing that these wicked people are the epitome of the apple of God's eye. This is not theologically true. This is not biblical. This is the synagogue of Satan. And it's high time that evangelicals realize that they have did God speed to evil man, and they are being morally corrupted, terribly morally corrupted and degraded by this unholy alliance with Israel.
And basically what it boils down to, one drop of poison poisons the whole well.
It certainly does.
You know. But they say with the Christian churches, I think that's where it applies to most of the mainline Christian churches, what's written in Revelation about Babylon the Great.
Yes, that's right. I should mention that I did write an article, and it's been posted at truthtellers.org for several weeks. It's entitled Pam Geller with a colon. Pam Geller. If Iran attacks Israel should nuke Europe. Maybe when we come back, I could briefly talk about that for a minute.
That would be great. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Our guest has been Reverend Ted Pike, and his website is truthtellers.org. And you wanted to talk about your article on Pam Geller.
Yes, thanks.
She's something else, isn't she?
Yes, Pam Geller is the voice of radical Islamophobia. She is a darling of the religious right, certainly of Joe Farah. He has been featuring her with a daily column now for several years. She's a regular on Fox News. She's appeared many conservative gatherings as well as in periodicals in their media and so on. And she's very dangerous because she, again, gives a raw viewpoint of disinformation straight from Tel Aviv right into the evangelicals. They are trusting her. She is a Judas goat, a false prophetess, if there ever was one. And I was led to write a pilot article about 3 weeks ago entitled Pam Geller, If Iran attacks Israel should nuke Europe. On her blog, which is entitled Atlas Shrugs, she says, "And I pray dearly that in the ungodly event that Tehran or its jihadi proxies like Hezbollah, Hamas, etc., target Israel with a nuke, that she retaliate with everything she has at Tehran, Mecca, Medina, not to mention Europe." She's saying that Israel should attack Europe with, unload her nuclear missiles on Europe. They exterminated all their Jews, but that wasn't enough. These monsters then went on to import the next generation of Jew killers. Now, by Jew killers, she means Muslims. She says this new hatred comes from Muslim immigrants, and the Jewish people are afraid now. Now, that's pretty strong stuff coming from a virtual staff writer of WorldNet Daily, and she is still writing for WorldNet Daily. And then I also state in this article a report from thinkprogress.org, a credible website. They say the right-wing terrorist in Norway, Anders Behring Breivik, had praised her blog and thoroughly cited her writing in his political manifesto. Geller justifies Breivik's attack on the Norwegian Labour Party summer youth camp because she says the camp is part of an anti-Israel indoctrination center. She says the victims would have grown up to become, quote, future leaders of the party responsible for flooding Norway with Muslims who refused to assimilate, who commit major violence against Norwegian nationals, including violent gang rapes with impunity, and who also live on the dole. Here she's endorsing the savage murder of 70 primarily young people at a youth camp in Norway. And this woman, again, is staying on the staff of WorldNet Daily as their featured weekly columnist. But when I sent out this article, I didn't realize how, I'm not going to say viral, but how popular it would be. It's been reprinted on close, I counted 87 websites.
Oh, my goodness.
And also forums who put up this article. And I hope we have dealt a significant blow to end her career.
I hope so, too. She's a useful idiot. Thank you so much, Reverend Pike. Appreciate your thoughts and your articles. Thank you so much.
Thank you.